I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug. But I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted. Where I felt adventures pulse with every step. And where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Rick Graham, Pitcherless bullpen expert. Rick, how's it going? I can't even remember what we started the last podcast with. Had the Celtics won the World Series? Won the World Series already?
Yes, they hit a couple home runs and scored some touchdowns in the final game. No, yeah, they ended up clinching on Monday. So
okay.
It was great, you know, good to see Al Horford win a title, you know, Brad Stevens, like, putting this team together. Great team, great season. I don't want to hear anything about they didn't play anyone because, you know, well, it's not their job to pick their opponents. So, it was a fun run, and now I can finally focus entirely on baseball for the next, you know, 3-4 months.
That's right. Yeah. And that will end our basketball talk for the season as yeah. well, as that season is complete. And I promise our listeners that we wouldn't talk about basketball if it weren't for it being Rick's team winning the championship. Like if it was the Knicks or whatever, for example, we wouldn't be discussing it. Exactly. But, you know, Warriors, Celtics, I think we got to at least mention it. But we've got a ton of stuff to cover today. So I think we're just going to hop right into it. As always, news, injuries, transactions from the past week. Then we'll head into the three up, three down section where we talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks. And then we'll head into our main topic as we bring up a topic that we discussed 2 years ago, almost back in September of 2022, where we talked about pitchers with high velocity and using that as an indicator of success. So we'll be going through the average fastball velocity leaderboards and discussing those players and hopefully trying to pick out the next big names in the world of relief pitching. But we'll start it off with the news, and we got a ton of news and notes and injuries. Yeah. So we'll start off. Devin Williams of the Brewers remains on track for return after the All-Star break, and he's expected to get on a mound soon. Are you going to be doing anything with your Trevor McGill shares with this news, or are we just going to wait until Devin Williams returns and see what happens?
Yeah, I think it's just you hold tight, let it play out, and see where we're at, you know, in August. And yeah, it's unfortunate. I just, because it's what do you, you're probably not going to get anything of value if someone is willing to buy. I mean, McGill's already up to 15 saves, which is crazy considering.
Yeah,
he got his first he got his first save at the end of April, I think. I think he might have only had like one save in April. So, yeah, he's been, you know, a huge bonus. I mean, 2.01 ERA, 15 saves. Yeah, you know, I'm not opposed if you can trade, if you can find a partner, a trade partner to, you know, take McGill on and give you something of impact in return. If you're just going to get like a bench bat or like a fringe starter, it doesn't really, you know, there's really probably no reason, probably just let McGill, you know, play out the next month or so. But yeah, I guess it just depends on the return. But I mean, he's just still, he's pitching great. He's not going to hurt you. I would just ride it out with McGill and, you know, just know that there's probably an end date in sight, but it's for now, just reap the rewards.
Totally. Yeah. And then with Devin Williams, I think he can probably be rostered in the majority of leagues because especially if you got IL slots, you just throw him on yeah. there and he should be back in like 3 weeks or so. So we are very close to his return. And I think it's going to be worth it to hold on to him because he should take over the closer role when he returns.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm like 99% sure he does. But there's also, I mean, this is a you know, a pretty serious back injury. Who knows? Maybe it takes him a little while to get, you know, to get going. Maybe he's not fully healthy at first. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, potential outcomes here. And that's why you can't get rid of him. You can't drop McGill in anticipation. I think you got to hold on to him at least until, I would say, 2 weeks after Williams is back and kind of see where things are at there. So, yeah, you can try to trade McGill, but don't drop him anytime soon.
Yeah. All right, and we'll stay in the NL Central as Giovanni Gallegos, who's recovering from a right shoulder impingement, could be activated this weekend. He's currently with the team in Miami, but they did not activate him today, and that was today's Thursday, and that would have been the last day for them to activate him for that series. They have Friday off, so he'll likely join the active roster for the Cardinals weekend series against the Giants, and he should probably hop right into a pretty significant setup role behind Jojo Romero and Andrew Kittredge.
Yeah, he'll probably end up being kind of where what he was, you know, in a similar role as to where he was before, with Kittredge being the seventh inning guy, Romero being the eighth inning guy, and Gallegos kind of being that stopper. Yeah, the early fifth, sixth inning stopper.
Okay.
Who, you know, controls, you know, gets some holds here and there, plus some wins. We'll see how he is. He was not pitching well before he went on the IL. I think he was one of the guys we talked about as his velo was way down. So we'll see where he's at this past weekend this upcoming weekend. And hopefully he looks better.
Yep. Totally agree there. Scott Efros and JT Brubaker of the Yankees began rehab assignments yesterday on Wednesday. Efros is probably the only one that's fantasy relevant, but he hasn't pitched since 2022. It's been a while for Efros, but he was pretty exciting when he was pitching. Then he had a great year with the Cubs before being traded to the Yankees, where he continued to find success, but he'll need to prove healthy before we can consider him in fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, it's been so long since he's pitched. It's hard to kind of think of where I might put him in the holds ranks, but he's definitely worth you know, monitoring, because he was great with the Cubs, and then, yeah, he was pitching really well with the Yankees before he got hurt. So if he's back healthy, looking like he used to, he's in the similar mold as Clay Holmes. He's going to get a ton of ground balls and, but it does come with some swing and miss ability as well. So, much needed, you know, addition to this Yankees bullpen if he's healthy. Yeah,
their bullpen is in shambles right now. But we'll go right back to the NL Central and discuss Abner Uribe, who will undergo surgery to repair a lateral meniscus tear in his right knee. A late season return is possible, but it won't be confirmed until after the surgery. Uribe began the year as the Brewers closer and then struggled and was demoted to the minors. I'm not sure how he was pitching there. I'm going to have to look that up. But Abner Uribe probably won't see him in high leverage role for the rest of the year.
Yeah, that should put him out of that opportunity. I think this probably makes the Brewers a team that's on the market for a reliever. Obviously not a closer or anything, but they could definitely use some help behind Hudson, McGill, and Williams. So I think that's kind of the effect of this is, you know, the Brewers probably at it because Piamps and Peguero, they're okay, but I don't think those aren't guys you want in October trying to get big outs. You know, I think you need to add at least one more piece there if you're the Brewers. So, yeah, it's unfortunate Uribe season's gone as poorly as it has. It started so well in like the first 2 weeks. It's like, this guy's going to be the closer for the Brewers for the next 3 months. And then, that turned quickly. So, hopefully he gets back and, you know, healthy for next season and we see a different Abner Uribe.
Mm-hmm. After being demoted, Uribe pitched to a 1.04 ERA in 8 2/3 innings with the Brewers AAA team. However, it came with the same number of strikeouts as walks, 14-14, and that was in 14 innings. So not great in terms of the control, and that's sort of exactly what we're hoping to see improve for Uribe. So hopefully this surgery can help him a little bit, and we see a new and improved Abner Uribe in 2025. Our next bit of news, Alex Lang was diagnosed with a right lat avulsion, and he's scheduled to undergo surgery next week, and he is also at risk of missing the rest of the season. This was another guy in the closer conversation in Detroit, similar to Abner Uribe, and now he's gone. That sort of locks Jason Foley in for the rest of the year, though who knows what the team's going to do in terms of trading or maybe moving Shelby Miller up into that role, but Lang is no longer in consideration there.
Yeah. I mean, this has been one of the most disappointing bullpens. I thought, especially with how full you looked in the first 2 weeks, the Tigers bullpen in general was really like, was unreal the first week of the season. I mean, and there's guys there like Holton's and Chafin and, from the left side, and then, Vest, Lang, Foley. There's definitely interesting pieces here, but it's kind of collapsed, and just with the rest of that team's season right now, it's just not looking good. So they'll probably be sellers, and I just don't know. I don't think he's probably not going anywhere. Shelby Miller probably does. It probably is going to be Foley the rest of the season because I don't know unless he gets hurt or they trade him. They trade him, which is probably like a 20% chance, but it definitely could happen. There's value there. Might be his highest value that they'll be able to move him at. So who takes over after that? No idea. It's maybe if Shelby Miller is still there, but other than that, it's a toss up.
I would be surprised if Jason Foley got traded and Shelby Miller did not. Right, I would think the latter would go before the former, but I wouldn't be surprised if both of them got traded. But that's Alex Lang, likely out for the season. And our last bit of news is Danny Coulomb of the Orioles underwent elbow surgery to remove bone chips in his left elbow. A September return is possible, though I wouldn't bank on that. I would not hold him on your IL for any reason, even if you expect him to return in September. But that's a huge blow to an Orioles bullpen that has been struggling to keep things together without Felix Bautista. Kimbrel and Yennier Cano and Jacob Webb are basically like the only guys that have been really trustworthy throughout the year. And even Kimbrel had a stint where it felt like he might lose the closer role. And so now without their top left-handed option, Cionel Perez becomes the top southpaw in that bullpen. And you have to figure this is going to be an area that they focus on at the deadline.
Should go get it, make a Tanner Scott reunion happen.
I forgot he pitched for them.
They need to add at least one, probably two relievers now that Coulomb's out, because he had really been their most steady. He was their most steady reliever. I mean, he was just nails for them. They probably need to get a lefty and a righty. There was talks, especially when Kimber was struggling, about them going out and getting a closer. I don't think it has to necessarily be a closer, but just two quality relievers. Because even with losing Bradish for the rotation, I still feel like, that's not, they need to add a starter, but not, they don't need to go all out in adding a starter. I think the biggest moves here are going to come in the bullpen.
Totally.
Yeah, and they definitely have the prospects to get a deal done for a pretty significant arm. But if those surgeries weren't enough, let's move over to the IL placements from the past week. Right. Hunter Stratton of the Pirates was placed on the 15-day IL with a right triceps strain. Josh Fleming was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. And this is pretty minor. Hunter Stratton had like four holds and a save before getting injured and was one of the few reliable options in that bullpen, but it's probably not somebody that was rostered in fantasy. Is there anybody that you are interested in that might get a chance now with one name out of the Holds conversation?
Well, it's not Fleming. Holderman's been so good for them. He's really the only guy I like outside of Bednar here. Mm-hmm. But he's, you know, probably not available in most Holds leagues, and this doesn't really change his value. We're going to talk about, you know, like we said, we're going to talk about some velo, velo guys, high velo guys. So Kyle Nicholas is an interesting name. I mean, the Pirates have kind of had a long list of guys who throw hard who haven't panned out there. So I wouldn't hold my breath that Nicholas is going to, but, there's definitely some interesting stuff there with him. So we'll see. I mean, Chapman's been pitching a little bit better lately as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'll still get his fair share of holds. So, yeah, it's pretty much Holderman and then Chapman as a deeper option.
Yeah, I think Nicholas is interesting, too. Like you said, he throws hard and he gets a lot of strikeouts. It's just about keeping the walks down. He's got a 5.40 ERA, but it comes with a 3.46 xFIP. So I think we can expect better times moving forward for Kyle Nicholas. But just keep an eye on him. Don't go adding him anywhere. We'll move over to the Angels, who placed Adam Simber on the 15-day IL with right shoulder inflammation. Jose Marte was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. Adam Simber had 8 holds despite a 7.03 ERA, more of a ground ball, soft contact guy anyway, but those numbers weren't great. I think the direct result here is that Ben Joyce likely sees higher leverage situations.
Yeah, he might. He should. Yeah. Oh, God. You know, Hunter Strickland's here. Yeah. Carson Fulmer. Jose Marte is another guy who throws hard. Limited MLB experience. I would love to see Joyce turn things around. He threw 42 pitches on Sunday. Was that the game he opened?
Must have been. Yeah, he pitched 2 innings in that game.
42 pitches is just... I don't quite understand that with Ben Joyce, who's never thrown. Anyway, Angels are going to Angels. So, Luis Garcia and Matt Moore, they're probably the first guys up for holds here. But yeah, if you're looking long term, Joyce is definitely the higher upside play of the three.
Totally. And we'll move to the other side of Los Angeles as the Dodgers placed Michael Grove on the 15-day IL with a right intercostal strain. JP Fireisen was recalled from the minors, and Michael Peterson had his contract selected from the minors. Peterson is a 30-year-old rookie. It's his first year in the Dodgers organization. He pitched for the Brewers from 2015 to 19. He must have undergone surgery and missed a year with 2020 because he didn't pitch again until 2022. Where he pitched for the Rockies, and that carried over into 2023. But now he's with the Dodgers, a much more promising organization. In AAA, Peterson had a 1.61 ERA across 22 and a third innings pitch with a 0.72 whip and a near 37% strikeout rate and just a 7% walk rate, though I'm not sure those are going to be carried over into the majors. He's got a hard fastball, 97 miles per hour, but it's got poor shape, like terrible IVB, bad vertical approach angle. It's not the best pitch, but it's his main pitch, of course. And then he pairs it with an even worse pitch somehow, an 88 mile per hour cutter, which is second percentile according to PLV, and then he throws a slider 3% of the time, which might just be unidentified cutters, but nonetheless, I don't know if Michael Peterson is going to be somebody that rises up the ranks, but considering his minor league production, he's someone to keep an eye on. The Dodgers also transferred Joe Kelly to the 60-day IL with a right shoulder strain. He had already been on the 15-day IL, but now he won't be able to return until the first week of July. Kelly threw a bullpen session a week ago, and he threw 25 pitches there. So I think we can expect Kelly to return when first eligible from the 60-day IL. But with Michael Grove out, I'm not sure how much that changes the hold situation. But I think Johan Ramirez might be the top name that moves up in, as the third right-hander behind Evan Phillips.
Yeah, I guess that would be, yeah. I mean, it's a better option than Fireizer or Peterson. Yeah, yeah, I mean, Peterson's definitely intriguing. I just, he was someone I'm kind of glad that you brought him up, because I took him, I was going to mention him later, and we talk about velo guys in the minors, and he was, you know, he's been one of the hardest throwing guys at AAA. So, but yeah, I didn't know. I hadn't been able to dig into the shape of his fastball. So that checks out as to why he's, you know, where he's at. Yeah, it's bullpen. This whole team's been kind of ravaged by injuries. I think, you know, it's going to be Hudson, Trinan, and Vezia. And yeah, I guess Ramirez kind of steps up as the next guy in line for those middle relief holds potentially. But I'm just going to stick with the Phillips, Hudson, yeah, Trinan, Vezia group for now and monitor the rest. Yeah,
definitely. And I think the biggest news of the day was Yimi Garcia of the Blue Jays being placed on the 15-day IL with right elbow ulnar neuritis. He underwent an MRI and it revealed no structural damage, but Chad Green is expected to take over the closer role. He was the closer to start the season when Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson were on the IL, and he has reclaimed that role. Brandon Eisert was selected from the minors, but then he was optioned to the minors like 2 days later. And then Ryan Burr was recalled from the minors. I don't think he's going to be fantasy relevant. He's sort of like a journeyman when it comes to relief pitchers. He's pitched for a lot of teams throughout his career, and he's 30 years old. So I don't think we have to consider him. But Chad Green gets a huge bump, and I think Nate Pearson should as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you said Pearson, because yeah, obviously Green, they've announced Green's going to be the closer for the time being, and he's been good. But yeah, Nate Pearson's been really, really good lately. So I wrote about him today and for the Hold Up article. I think he's a very interesting long term play, the way he's been pitching lately, and the state that this team is in, 5.5 games out of out of a wild card spot. Probably, they probably will end up selling like little pieces at least. Like, so that means Trevor Richards, Jimmy Garcia, possibly Jordan Romano, possibly Chad Green as well. So, you know, that definitely opens up a door for Pearson, who could be no reason to think Pearson, especially the way he's pitching now. I mean, there's potential for him to be a closer for the next, you know, I think he's under contract for 3 years. So the next three years while he's there, he's definitely got the stuff for it. And yeah, he's starting to prove it now, and the command's gotten better. So hopefully he can keep this thing going. He's definitely the biggest riser for me in this Blue Jays pen.
Yeah, I'm excited for Pearson to someday take over that closer role. And it could be as early as this year, but I think next year is going to be Pearson's year. So start getting hyped now. Yeah. We'll stay in the AL East and discuss Ian Hamilton, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a right lat strain. He won't throw for 3 to 4 weeks. So we won't see Hamilton back for probably 5 or 6 weeks, which would mean that he's going to return sometime around the end of July or early August. It's a big blow for a Yankees bullpen that has already dealt with a ton of injuries. But Anthony Misevich was selected from the minors in a corresponding move and then subsequently optioned back to the minors as the team signed Tim Hill to a one-year contract. Hill is a southpaw, been a veteran in the majors for a while. He pitched for the White Sox earlier this year, and he was terrible. 23 innings pitched, a 5.87 ERA, and a 2.22 whip. That's one of the worst I've ever seen in a sample of that size. But he also struck out just 11% of the batters he's faced while walking 8.5% of the batters he faced. So Hill is not somebody to consider in fantasy. Low strikeout arm, probably not going to produce the best ratios either or get many holds. However, with Ian Hamilton out, Luke Weaver and Tommy Canley become super integral members of this bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, they're really hanging on. They're gonna probably be a team that, and there's a lot of teams right now that are in the hunt that definitely are going to be adding relievers. And it's, I mean, you hate to, you know, pay up because right now the prices are high.
Yeah,
but I mean, some of these teams, you know, the Cubs, Yankees, it's starting to get to the point where they really need help now. And I think the Yankees can probably survive for another month. And I mean, they've got a pretty comfortable lead as far as wild card, and they're right in the AL East race. So they guess they don't have to be as desperate, but yeah, I mean, it's really, they really need to add I would like to see them add another team that should add a righty and a lefty, probably, or at least two quality arms that they can trust in the playoffs. So Hill's definitely not one of them. He's, you know, maybe he can be like a poor man's Wandy Peralta, you know. That's the best case scenario, I think. But yeah, it's just a stopgap option for now.
Yeah. All right. And our last IL placement is Nick Sandlin of the Cleveland Guardians. He was placed on the 15-day IL with lower back inflammation. Darren McCoffin was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. Sandlin was sort of a secondary holds option in Cleveland, despite pitching really well this year. I don't think it changes much in this bullpen, though. It sort of just removes one of the names of many that are capable of locking down a lead.
Yeah, he had been getting more holes towards the start of the season, and now it's been, you know, Gattis and Kate Smith have come along and kind of taken over with Barlow and Hedges. So not a huge blow, but he had pitched pretty well for them. And, you know, now they're down Morgan and Sandlin. So it's, you know, and Trevor Stephan and James Karinchak. So those four guys that, you know, used to be a big part of this bullpen. And this bullpen is still great. They're just rolling without those guys. So, I don't think McCoggin's going to have much of a role, but he'll probably just be, you know, settling as a long guy for them.
Yeah, sounds like it. But that will wrap up our news and transactions, or news and injuries. Now we'll head over to our transactions. But first, we'll take a quick break here on In the Pen.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com, CP439267V1.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We just went through the news and injuries from the past week. Now we'll discuss the transactions from the past week, starting with Jordan Leisure of the White Sox, who was optioned to the minors. Pretty surprising move considering he was one of their top setup options, but he is a young guy and he wasn't really living up to his potential. Chad Kuhl was selected from the minors in a corresponding move, though I don't find him fantasy relevant at all. I think the biggest moves here is that John Brebbia, Steven Wilson, and likely Tanner Banks as well see more time in high leverage situations. However, it's the White Sox, so they won't have too many of those.
Yeah, I mean, and this could be a completely different bullpen come August, so it's hard to really take too much away. Brebbia's pitched well lately.
Why did he get a save on Tuesday?
Kopech worked like the 7th inning today or 8th inning today in a non-save situation. So I just think, I don't know what they're doing. Who knows what they're doing.
Maybe they're like removing Kopech from the role. So maybe he can get some confidence back and put up better numbers. And then they put Brebbia in the closer role so he can get some saves and make his trade value higher. Yeah.
I mean,
that's not even conspiracy theory. Yeah. I'm trying to actually figure out what they're doing.
Oh, it definitely could be part of it. Yeah. I mean, they need to move some pieces, and these guys don't have the best numbers right now.
Yeah.
They do have good K rates. I mean, they're still striking out guys. That's and yeah, I mean, it's even Tanner Banks, like you mentioned, he's a name that I was like, he could be an interesting trade piece. I feel like a team could make him better. And, you know, not a ton of left-handed options available at the deadline. So I wonder if he's another guy who could go. And then, yeah, maybe it's Steven Wilson and Leisure comes back up for the second half. But yeah, it's a mess there. I mean, Kopech's got 5 saves as the quote unquote closer there. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, Banks is pretty interesting, though he's 32, which surprises me. I thought he was going to be way younger, considering it's his third year pitching in the majors. But yeah, maybe somebody sees something in him. You could get him for a bag of peanuts at this point.
Probably,
so right. Yeah, I don't see why you wouldn't go for it. And yeah, Steven Wilson likely sticking around with free agency on the horizon in 2028. But Jordan Leisure pitched to a 4.08 ERA and struck out just 21% of the batters he faced while walking nearly 14%. Yeah. So a return to the minors was warranted there. Our next transaction was Luis Contreras and also Nick Hernandez, both of these guys pitchers for the Astros. Contreras had his contract selected from the minors. He's a 28-year-old rookie, and it's his first year in the Houston organization after spending the 2019 to 2023 seasons with the Brewers. At AAA this year, Contreras pitched to a 1.40 ERA across 19 and a third innings with a 0.98 ERA and a 38.3% strikeout rate while walking just 10% of the batters he faced. So that's pretty interesting. And then Nick Hernandez is a 29-year-old rookie. He returned to the Houston organization this year after spending last year and half of this year with the Padres. At AAA with the Padres earlier this year, Hernandez pitched to a 1.93 ERA across 23 and two-thirds innings pitched with a 1.18 ERA and a pretty nice 34% strikeout rate and just a 9% walk rate. Hernandez is a primary slider pitcher. He throws it like 60% of the time and pairs it with a 90-mile-per-hour fastball that has great shape and then occasionally throws a changeup, and occasionally, I mean, like 1%. So either of these guys interest you? I mean, I'm sure there's little information in your mind on them, but there is a shot that they become something considering how good their minor league numbers were.
Yeah, I mean, they have definitely a chance. I don't know enough about them, and they're a bit old for, you know, rookies, yeah. But there's definitely a chance. I think with just the state of this bullpen, and I don't see the Astros as sellers, but they're starting to really kind of fall out of contention. Maybe Presley can be moved.
Late fast.
Yeah. So there's definitely potential the second half of the year for some holds chances here. But yeah, let's see how they do in an extended extended work here at the major league mm-hmm. level.
Totally. All right, we'll head over to the Rockies, who activated Justin Lawrence from the 15-day IL. He was placed on the IL on May 27th with a right shoulder strain, so he missed more than 3 weeks with the injury. This is a fun name. Angel Chivilli was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. I did have to look that one up, but that is I love his last name. Just saying that is fun. But nonetheless, Justin Lawrence back in the high leverage closer committee in Colorado, most likely. He had 2 saves earlier this year, but he had a 6.35 ERA, and Lawrence will have to battle with Tyler Kinley and Jalen Beeks for saves in Colorado.
Yeah, it's Colorado.
I'm not picking him up.
Look at the ERAs in this. I mean, look at the ERAs in this bullpen right
it's
now.
So bad.
It's yeah, it's unfortunate. And they have guys who throw hard and they have like good stuff. It's just they're stuck in Coors, man. Yep. It's a shame.
I mean, and it's not just Coors though. It's like the pitching development in Colorado is so bad that it just exponentially gets worse when you combine those together.
The combination is it's what set their organization back to this point, and it's not getting any better anytime soon, it looks.
Yeah, and while we're on the topic, the Rockies also activated Jake Bird from the 15-day IL. He was placed on the IL May 19th with right elbow inflammation, so he's been out for over a month. Josh Rogers was placed on the 15-day IL in a corresponding move. He has a left rotator cuff strain. Jake Bird likely going to be one of the top setup options in Colorado, but like Rick said, 5.56 ERA, 15% strikeout rate. I'd stay far away from Jake Bird, despite the really cool first name.
It's, they're probably going to hang on. I don't know because again, they have Jalen Beeks for this year, but they'll probably extend him for 3 years at $15 million or something. I don't know what the, there could be a, someone who comes out of, you know, comes out of the trade deadline looking like a pretty solid closer here. Mm-hmm. Cause Beeks will, I mean, they have to move Beeks. I'd imagine they move Beeks. So then, yeah, maybe Lawrence can finally figure things out, or I like Nick Mears. We're going to talk about him later too, but yeah, this bullpen right now is just stay away from it until someone breaks through in some sort of way.
Yeah, definitely. All right. And our last transaction from the past week was Chris Martin of the Red Sox was activated from the 15-day IL. He was placed on the IL on June 5th with anxiety. So I'm glad to see him back in just about the minimum time. But Chris Martin, actually, that should be exactly the minimum time. But that's Chris Martin back. He will be the top setup option in Boston.
Yeah, it's good to see him back. Relatively, yeah, very short stint.
Do you think they maybe keep him out of high leverage situations since it was like a mental thing that sure. sent him on the IL?
Yeah, they could. I mean, I was thinking about it today. I think Slayton's been pitching well enough where he's definitely in the setup role. And, you know, Bernardino's been getting a ton of holds. Weiser mixes in. Boozer's been good. Zach Kelly's been pitching better lately. It's kind of a random bullpen, but these guys have been pitching well lately. So, no need for Martin to rush back. They could ease him back into a role, let him get comfortable. And yeah, it's good to see, you know, Canley Jansen's been pitching so well lately too. It's this bullpen's been a big factor into, you know, where the Red Sox are still hanging around in playoff spots. So
yeah,
I do wonder, and I heard Alex Cora talking about how, like, you know, Canley Jansen's been such a big leader for this team. Maybe he's not necessarily, you know, maybe he's not getting traded at the deadline, or he's not, I thought he was a definite. It sounded like he was a definite like a month ago. So maybe things have changed there.
I mean, if they're above 500, I would be like, yeah, super surprised to see them trade him.
And it just, you know, they're really not a ton of teams that are in the wild card race now. They're like the one team that's out of it. That's, you know, only two games back, I believe. So
yeah,
they're definitely still in it. I don't see why they would move Jansen for, you're probably not going to get a huge return for him anyway. So it's, you know, yeah, might as well just hang tight with the bullpen that they have and see how things play out.
Totally. All right. And we'll just head straight into the three up, three down section as we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks. We'll start it off with the risers, beginning with Edwin Diaz of the Mets, who has returned from the IL and taken over the closer role in New York, and he's done so pretty easily, recording two saves across the past week. And I don't know if you're on the same page as me, but I'm feeling pretty confident that Edwin Diaz is going to be Edwin Diaz for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'm also confident, and we've seen, you know, Munoz has been dealing with an injury, and Mason Miller, I don't think he's really a tier one guy right now, with not just, you know, those struggles he's had recently, but it's also the A's. It's just hard to predict, you know, how many saves he's going to get. So I think Diaz, you know, belongs in that top three with, you know, Clase and Hader. There's going to be bad luck with him. And same with Josh Hader. They're kind of similar where, yeah, home runs are an issue. They give up some hard contact, but, like, you know, you just got to, you know that there's going to be like a really bad stretch in the season. And then for the rest of it, you know, it all evens out, and he's great. So I think Diaz, we're going to see, you know, elite stuff from him moving forward, but you never know. I guess it's just in this trying to predict relievers, it's kind of hard, but I think Diaz, everything, all the tea leaves, all the stats, all the underlying metrics point to him having a good second half.
Yeah, I totally agree. We can move over to Craig Kimbrell, who is our next riser. And he did just blow a save yesterday, but your article, I know, came out before that. So, of course, that happened. But he's been on fire since May 10th, even including that one outing. He has a 0.64 ERA across his last 14 innings. That comes with 8 saves and 18 strikeouts, as well as a couple holds and a couple wins. So I think Craig Kimbrell can really be trusted throughout the year as a top 10 option, totally pitching for one of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah. And I wrote this article before that. So, you know, before his last outing, you know, over his past 13 innings, he had a 34% strikeout minus walk rate, 1.71 Sierra, no runs allowed. So he had been just dominating. And at the state of closers right now, there's not a ton of guys that could put up those types of numbers. So I think he belongs in the top 12. The one interesting thing over that span is only a 10% swing and strike rate, which I think we've talked about a little bit, where it's just he's all of a sudden, he's known for his lack of command, but he's been, filling up the strike zone and guys just haven't been swinging. So he's getting a ton of called strikes, which probably that, at some point guys are going to be like, all right, look, he's filling up the zone now. We got to be a little bit more aggressive. So, it's a cat and mouse game with pitchers and hitters, and I'm sure he'll have to adjust at some point as well. But for now, it's working out for him. And except for that, in the game last night where he let up that leadoff double to Volpe, and it's the Yankees, that's going to happen. But at least it wasn't, he didn't lose the game. He still held them in check, and the Orioles won in the 10th. So, we'll take it.
I'll take a win all day. And our last riser is Carlos Estevez of the Angels. He is a guy that we have not really been a fan of, but he's been totally different this year from many perspectives. I think the most noticeable one is the lack of walks. The guy started his season with 12 and two-thirds consecutive innings without walking a batter. That came with a 5.68 ERA, though. And then the next three outings after that, he walked one batter in each of them. But since then, he has thrown seven consecutive perfect innings while recording six saves, and that's Carlos Estevez of the Angels. And I think we can sort of be confident that he is not at risk of losing his closer role, though I don't know how sustainable this new Estevez is.
Right. It's not like he's not getting swings and misses. And I do feel like similar to like with Kimbrel, it's like if you're just, it's the walk rate being low is awesome. It's, it can't be. Last year he was at 11%. That can't be it. It's got to be under 100%. Yeah. But only having three walks on the year, I feel like you're just kind of leaving yourself open to allowing some hard contact.
And yeah.
Especially with his stuff not being the best. So, but, for now it's working. He also, I would imagine this is, the Angels are kind of hard to predict. I mean, we thought they were going to trade Ohtani last year. They didn't end up trading anyone, and they, bought guys at the deadline. So I wonder, I imagine Estevez would be on the move, but it's definitely not a guarantee. But the thing is like, there's so many, if he goes to the Cubs tomorrow, he's their closer right away. There's some teams where he could wind up in a closer role, even, if he gets traded. So that kind of, makes me feel a little bit better about his, chances for the rest of having value the rest of the season. But just right now, it's just the fact that, he's the walk rate is going to at least keep his floor pretty high. And, that's, what all you can really ask for what is he, your third, fourth closer. So it's he's fine. It's just, I don't think the ceiling's getting much higher.
No, but the sub one whip is going to be pretty valuable, especially if it's coming with saves. I don't think it really matters how high his ERA gets if he's producing in at least a couple of categories. But that's Carlos Estevez, and that's our last riser. And as these guys rise up the ranks, others have to move down the ranks to accommodate them. So we'll start with Alexis Diaz, who's moving down the ranks. He's pitching for the Reds. And it felt at one point like Diaz was figuring something out, but he's turned right back around and showed his true face.
It's just and I guess we can, because I wrote about him and Hector Neris, and they've both been at the bottom two in like so many categories amongst relievers. Sierra, xFIP, strikeout minus walk rate, both bottom five in CSW, swing, strike rate, whip, ER, pretty much every category. They're bottom five or bottom two. And I mean, there's no real reason for the Reds to just keep pushing Alexis Diaz as the closer. Good. Yeah, and it's not like he's got this huge contract, or I mean, it wouldn't hurt to take him out of the role for a little bit. I know they really don't have any options. They for whatever reason don't want to trust Fernando Cruz in that role or whatever it is. But I don't quite understand why there hasn't even really been any talk. I mean, there hasn't been any talk of him possibly losing his role, at least with Neris. Mm-hmm. Council had to say like, we're not removing him from the role yet. And yet he hasn't had, they're kind of quietly removed him from the role, but we can get to him next. I, yeah, I just don't know how much longer they're going to let Alexis Diaz kind of just stumble out there. He's been fine. He's fine. And then, you know, has a really bad outing. And it's just the whole season's been bad. All of last mm-hmm. the second half of last year has been bad. Yeah, it's been a big enough
full year.
It's been a full sample size. It's been, yeah, it's been a whole season's worth of sample size. So
it sort of feels like he's holding on to the role just because Edwin Diaz is his brother.
You wonder that. I know. I like, it's, I just can't believe there hasn't been at least like some sort of murmurs like, hey, we need to go get a closer. We should, I mean, there's like, you know, go get a guy. I mean, Mason Miller, like, you know, this is a team that's building towards the future. Mm-hmm. But their bullpen is still a mess. So like long-term, so you can get a guy with some term here. It doesn't have to be a stopgap closer. You can go find someone else. And I just don't think, yeah, I think Diaz needs to take a step back and work to, you know, get back to where he was the first half of last year.
You know, I've been pressing the button for Fernando Cruz all year, yeah. But I'm shifting to, I think you're expecting me to say Lucas Sims. I'm going Graham Ashcraft. Get him out of the rotation. The guy sucks as a starter. Put him in the bullpen. He's got the stuff to do it, and just let him eat. Let him go close out some games for a season that doesn't look like it's going to matter. For
I said that at the beginning of the year. Yeah. I'll be fully transparent. I heard Eno say that. That's where I got that from, but it's totally like, I mean, his stuff is very similar to Emmanuel Clase, and if you just put him in just the cutter at least, and he's a two pitch guy. He can't be in the rotation. So I don't know why they're still trying to like force him into a rotation spot when they don't need him. And I mean, they can find a fifth starter. They don't need Ashcraft.
They have too many starters already.
Right.
I mean, I know guys are injured right now, but yeah, guys in the minors, they have so many guys in the minors. So, I mean, Graham Ashcraft is in the minors.
Right. Like, when are we going to, cause that transition to me feels inevitable. So like when is that going to happen? Cause it's long overdue at this point. And maybe not closer right away, but I mean, he could fly through. I mean, I would love to see it with the cutter he has. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there could be big time potential there with Ashcraft as a closer.
All right. If you're in a really, really deep dynasty league, there's your chance at a future closer. We'll stay in the NL Central as we shift over to the Cubs as Hector Neris continues to fall down the ranks. I mean, I don't think we ever really believed Hector Neris was going to be somebody that we could trust as a closer, but he was getting saved, so we didn't really have a choice. But things have come crashing down to earth across his past three outings as he's allowed 8 runs, 7 of which were earned. That's a 23.63 ERA in those three outings, and those have ruined his numbers for the year as well, as he's currently sitting with a 4.73 ERA, which is much better than his underlying metrics, which suggests an ERA over 5. He's just walking so many batters, 16.5%, and he's got the lowest strikeout of his career at 19.8%. So everything looking bad for Hector Neris right now, but like, what are they going to do? Because Mark Leiter Jr. has also struggled, and I don't even know who else they could turn to.
Yeah, I mean, Leiter Jr., at least from I looked into it a little bit more today, it looks like it's, you know, some bad luck. He's got like a 435 BABIP over the past couple weeks. So mm-hmm. I still think Leiter's probably their best option.
They just don't trust him as the closer.
No,
he hasn't gotten one save this year.
They like Neris as, you know, his experience and whatnot, whatever it may be.
Experience at blowing leads.
Not sure if they remember what he did in Philadelphia in his time there when every single Phillies fan wanted him out of the role.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's right when I started to believe Neris might be okay. I'm like, you know, maybe he's okay. Maybe he can be, you know, fine back end closer. And then this happens. Of course, it's always when I start to trust someone.
Oh my god!
The wheels fall off.
I was looking at Alexis Diaz's pitcher list page, and I was like, "Wow, he's bad." I look at Hector Neris; it's not even a competition. He's looking like the worst pitcher in baseball.
It's one of those things, and I think I brought this up early when he kind of started getting saves. It's like just watching him pitch, and you can just the hitters aren't fooled by anything he's throwing. Like they're not chasing anything. I don't know when this happened because he was still getting a lot of whiffs last year and the year before. So You know, and the underlying metrics for his stuff, at least, like, they look similar to where they've been in the past. So I'm not sure if it's like a tipping thing or what, but he just hasn't been, you know, has not been effective at all. So it's definitely time for him to, for them to move on from him. And it's just, yeah, what there might be options. There might be options in the minors that are better.
I can tell you who they got. They got Ethan Roberts and Daniel Palencia. Yeah,
I know. I like Palencia. We'll talk about him a little bit more. He's not ready to be a closer. No. You know, I something I meant, someone I mentioned before was, you know, Ben Brown should be closing out games if he's healthy. Been
good as a starter, hasn't he?
He had like one or two good starts. He's been solid. It's just he's a two pitch guy. He only has two pitches, and
yeah,
it's just he can't go too deep into games. And you know, if you're a two pitch guy, you end up in the bullpen eventually anyway. So they could always, you know, have a stopgap reliever for this season and then move, try to, you know, help him develop. He seems like a guy who would develop a splitter down the road. But for now, he's a fastball curveball guy. So maybe he's an option. Julian Merriweather's throwing bullpens.
But he's not going to return until after the All-Star break.
Yeah, he's still a month away. But I mean,
I think this is a team that's primed to take advantage of a market that is doesn't have a lot of relievers, but everybody wants them. So just get out ahead and be the first team and be like, hey, we're going to do it before they're all gone and go get somebody because we clearly need somebody like ASAP.
It's like really just somebody who's competent, like whoever, maybe, I mean,
or maybe they sell.
They're under 500. They're getting to the point where they might have to look at selling. Yeah. They've really taken a turn for the worst here. I don't know. But they were built to win now or now-ish. You know, they're not looking to, you know, rebuild here. So, I still think that they and, you know, you can add a reliever now. And if things take an even worse turn and you have to sell in a month, then you can always move whoever you traded for. So that does happen. It's weird, but it does happen sometimes. So yeah, maybe go out and get someone now, maybe, and see if that stops the bleeding here and they can kind of get on a streak, get on a run. But yeah, they need to do something quick. They're the team that, yeah, like you said, they might have to get ahead of the rest of the pack and just, you know, go make a move for someone now and see.
Yeah, because they're gonna fall out of the race if they don't do something.
Right. Yeah, they're in dire need for a bullpen arm.
Yeah, that's Hector Neris. And our last faller is Clay Holmes of the Yankees. He was really good for the whole year outside of one outing where he allowed 4 earned runs. He also allowed 3 runs in another outing, but those were all unearned. So he only had the one outing where he allowed earned runs. The last 3 outings, though, not too kind to Clay Holmes. He's allowed 6 runs combined, 5 of which were earned, which, if you recall what I just said, that's more than he's allowed in the entire season prior to these 3 outings. So not a great stretch for Clay Holmes. It's bumped his ERA up to 2.53 when he was a guy who was sporting a sub-1 mark for a while. And it's not great, but I don't have a feeling that he's going to lose the role. But I think it makes it pretty clear that Clay Holmes is not going to like outperform his ERA estimators the entire year.
Right. I feel like there was a little bit of a stretch there when, like, there was that time not too long ago where Clay Holmes was, if not elite, like near elite. And, you know, he was a ground ball machine, also getting a ton of strikeouts. And last year the strikeouts left and they were kind of coming back early in the season. And yeah, lately it hasn't been the case. You know, his last 16 innings, he has a 6.8% K to walk rate, 1.79 whip. You know, the stuff's still pretty good and he gets a ton of ground balls, but you know, with the shift rules, the ground balls have been leaning, you know, trending to he's allowing more hits because, you know, they can't cover, you know, half the infield. And I don't know. He's a good closer. He's a good reliever. He's just never, I always, you know, want him to, I think he can break into that like top 8, 5 to 8 range, but I just don't know. I don't think he can get there without getting some, you know, strikeout stuff back and some swing and miss back into his game.
Yeah. So I think Clay Holmes, clearly somebody that we can still trust as a closer, but not somebody that we can expect to rise into the upper tier of closers. But that will wrap up our three up, three down section. To recap, the risers were Edwin Diaz, Craig Kimbrell, and Carlos Estevez. And our fallers were Alexis Diaz, Hector Neris, and Clay Holmes. Oh, that's crazy. We had Diaz and Diaz. Yeah, now we'll head over to our main topic as we discuss the players with the highest average fastball velocity. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We're heading into our main topic as we discuss the top velo guys in baseball out of the bullpen. We had a pretty long episode centered around this in the later stages of the 2022 season. And there we were looking to use this because if you pull up a list of the top fastball velocity guys, it's a who's who of the best closers in baseball. So mm-hmm. that's sort of an indicator of, you know, if somebody else is on this list, they are likely set to become that in the future, as long as they can hone their skills as they become seasoned veterans. So we'll go through this list and talk about some of the well-known names that have high velocity and hopefully pick out some sleepers with high velocity that could be a closer at some point in the future of their careers. We'll hop right into it. And obviously the man, the myth, Mason Miller is the top fastball velocity guy. He's at 100.8 miles per hour. And we consistently see him hit 103.
Yeah, he's good. that's you know, that's all there is to it. He throws hard, and it's, you know, sometimes that's all you need. It's not too hard to look at. You know, sometimes we want to look at all these underlying metrics, but you know, for closers, it, and even for some starters, it's, you know, if you throw harder than everyone else, you're gonna probably have success as long as you're, you know, don't have a 16% walk rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. But he joins a list of a bunch of other locked in closers that are atop the fastball velocity leaderboards. At number two, Yoan Duran at 100.3 miles per hour. Ryan Helsley up there at 599.3. Emmanuel Clase, obviously 99.1. And Camilo Duvall as well at 99.1. Those are the five closers that are throwing their fastball at least 99 miles per hour, and they're pretty locked in. But there are a couple names ahead of that trio of guys in Helsley, Clase, and Duvall, and that's Ben Joyce at three and Justin Martinez at four. We can start with the former. Ben Joyce throws his fastball an average of 100.2 miles per hour, and if you've ever watched him pitch, it's pretty incredible. His low arm slot gives him incredible vertical approach angle, especially with his extension. So that fastball has got to look like, I don't know, 110. It's ridiculous. So the thing with him, though, is he cannot choose where he wants to throw it. Right. I mean, it's going to end up where it goes, but it's an elite pitch. It will just be a matter of whether or not he can control that that will decide whether or not he becomes the closer in a couple of years in LA.
Yeah, it's going to come down to health and the command with him. That's always been the question since they drafted him. And that's been the question since he's been there. I really hope he can, you know, have both those things work in his favor, and he can be the long-term closer in LA. That at least gives them some fun, you know, long-term, you know, player to be excited about here. So yeah, I hope things work out for him. And he's really the only, I mean, if Soriano is going to stick in the rotation, he's the only real relief prospect that I'm interested in LA.
Yeah. And I think I'm more interested in Justin Martinez, though.
Yeah.
He pitches for the Diamondbacks. He also averages 100.1 miles per hour on his fastball. Super incredible. But I think what inspires me more about Martinez is the clearer path to the closer role. Like, he could be the closer next year. And also, he's only 22 and has found much more success than Ben Joyce has had. He's had much more time in the minors. Martinez has been pitching with the Diamondbacks organization since he was 16 back in 2018. He's now just 22, but he's been dominant this year at 0.67 ERA across 27 innings. That comes with a 27.5% strikeout rate. And the walk rate up at 12.8% is not great, but at 22, I'll take that.
It's better than what it's been, and you know, it's crazy how effective he's been at a 12.8% walk rate. Just imagine if he can get that under 10% at some point. Because yeah, the stuff here is like, it's not too far off from like a Yoan Duran, and it's, you know, sinker, slider, splitter trio that all, you know, the slider has a 49% whiff rate, 44% whiff on the splitter. There's just, it's not just the fastball with him. It's the other stuff. So there's a full arsenal here. If he can just shore up the commit, that's just really the walk rate. Everything else, like if he's, you know, just looking at his Savant page right now, everything is bright red except for the walks being, you know, blue. So if you just shore up the walks, everything else is going to work itself out.
Yeah, I think Justin Martinez is a younger version of Jordan Hicks. The fastball he throws is a sinker. Yeah, it's a sinker averaging 100 miles per hour, and then he's got a slider and splitter. That's the same exact pitches that Hicks has, except I think his slider is actually a sweeper. Nonetheless, like that sinker's getting a ton of ground balls. The slider gets a ton of swinging strikes, and then the splitter just helps out against lefties. But having three options like that when you're throwing 100 miles per hour, I mean – If he's not rostered in your dynasty league, this is a guy that needs to be rostered universally in those, because by next year, I think like he's going to be one of the top guys drafted in fantasy, even if he doesn't get a single save this year.
Yeah, I mean, especially in holds leagues, even if they do go to Ginkle for a year or two or whatever before Martinez, it shouldn't be too long now. And I think he's a little bit better than you bring up with Hicks, but I think, I mean, the swing and miss stuff's way better than where Hicks was at this point in his career. So, but it's an interesting one because, you know, Hicks came up really young as well as a reliever throwing 100 miles per hour and similar like, arsenals as well. So it's a good call, but I think there's just even more upside here with Martinez.
Totally agree. And then we'll move down the list down to number eight as Trevor Megill averages 98.7 miles per hour with his fastball. We talk about him a lot, but I think people can sort of have it go over their heads how good Trevor Megill actually is. Like, I think they hear us talk about him and they're like, oh yeah, he's got good numbers. He's got pretty decent strikeout numbers and he's the closer. But I think it can get lost how good his stuff is, because when you're throwing that fast and you're 6'8" and how much extension does he have? 6.7 feet of extension. That's above average, and he's got like crazy IVB as well. Like that fastball comes in a million miles per hour when he's that close to you. And I think that makes it pretty clear how good he is, and it helps the rest of his arsenal, mostly his curveball, which is basically his only other pitch. But it helps that pitch play up so much. It's got a 98th percentile swinging strike rate, and that's because the fastball comes in nearly 12 miles per hour more.
Yeah, because I mean almost an 18 inch IVB. And he's throwing it 70% this year, and he probably could go more of a 50-50 split with his fastball and curveball combos, because the curveball is a really good pitch as well. That's, you know, his big swing and miss pitch when people are looking, sitting on his fastball, and then he throws that, he makes him just look silly. It's taken him a while. He's 30 years old. He's a late bloomer, but I mean, the stuff here is incredible, and I mean, even if he's not closing out games, he's just a super fun reliever to watch because of, you know, he's just a huge dude throwing 98 and that breaking ball. It's just like, it's silly. It's really, it shouldn't be allowed, but you know, here we are.
Yeah. All right. And Abner Uribe is on the same team. We discussed him earlier, but he's a guy for the future that could potentially be the closer of the future. It felt like that for a while, and it felt premature when he was getting saves earlier this year, but he definitely still has the stuff. Let's hope when he returns from that surgery that he's still at that same level. I think it's pretty crazy that the A's have Mason Miller and then they also have Lucas Ursig, because nobody really talks about that. Are they the only team? I think they're the only team with two pitchers in this top 10.
Well, Megill and Uribe.
Yes, yeah. You're right. Uribe is not really on the team. Yeah,
exactly.
Ursig, though, just returned from injury, but he is a converted, I never know how to do this. He's converted from being a position player. I think some people say converted reliever, but that can sort of be misconstrued. Anyway, Ursig has continuously increased his fastball velocity as he, you know, gets a handle of pitching. He's really only been pitching for a few years. He started pitching in 2021, and he's got his fastball velocity up to 98.5 miles per hour on average. He's a big strikeout arm. And if the A's do inevitably trade Mason Miller at some point, I think Lucas Ursig is going to be the next guy.
Yeah, they could put him right in that role, and he'd be fine. There's still some, I mean, The changeup's pretty promising. The changeup's pretty good, but he doesn't really have a great breaking ball, and the slider's hit or miss. But yeah, overall, I mean, the velo and the four pitch mix is very interesting, and it's been working for him. He's been struggling since he came back a little bit, but probably just, you know, just from the time off. So the overall numbers for the season have been great, and it's been a surprising, you know, tandem in Oakland with him and Miller and even Austin Adams to a degree. Those three have been a really good trio at the back end of games.
Mm-hmm. I would love to see him throw his sinker more. He throws his fastball like an equal amount, but the fastball, 30th percentile PLV, while the sinker, 99th percentile PLV. It's one of the best sinkers in baseball, and he throws it only a quarter of the time. He throws four pitches a quarter of the time. I think he needs to throw that sinker like at least a third of the time.
Yeah, that sinker gets a ton of break. Yeah, I wonder. I mean, that could be. He might just be a better sinker slider changeup guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's something for, I mean, you talk about Miller being traded. Why not Urcig? I mean, he's got a lot of control as well, but he's already 29. So, you know, he's kind of up there. He's probably not, you know, part of the A's future, which is not, you know, going to be here for another 5 years anyway. So I could see him also being available as a kind of a consolation if they don't move Miller.
Yeah, so that's our top 10, and so we'll move through the rest of them at a little faster pace. At 11, we've got another locked-in closer, Robert Suarez, averages 98.5 miles per hour on his heater. We've discussed that pitch all year because that's basically the only pitch he throws, and he's found tons of success. Ryan Stanek also throws really hard at 98.3 miles per hour, and he's just two spots ahead of Andrés Muñoz, who also averages 98 miles per hour on his heater. That's a pretty solid pair of flamethrowers there in Seattle.
Yeah, I just think Stanek is still, obviously Munoz is the better option. I want to see Stanek, you know, use his velo and use his stuff a little bit better to get strikeouts. But it's, you know, he's been fine this year. There's nothing really to complain about. He's getting a ton of holds, getting saves, seven saves on the season. But yeah, I mean, for what they ended up, you know, they got him late in the spring for, you know, for a bargain contract. He's worked out really well for the Mariners.
Yeah. All right. We'll keep moving down the list. Joe Kelly's at 13. He's injured, though we did discuss him earlier. Michael Kopech is at 15. He's averaging 98 miles per hour on his fastball. We've talked about him a lot this year. So we'll skip to Kyle Nicholas, who we mentioned briefly earlier in the podcast. He averages 98 miles per hour on his fastball. He's a right-hander for the Pirates. Is there anything else about Nicholas that interests you, or is it just the velocity?
Yeah, I think he's someone to, you know, keep an eye on, and that's the velocity. He's averaging, yeah, 90. He's in the 98 range. He's pretty good. Even his IVB is at 16.1 inches, so not elite, but not bad. Definitely above average. Slider showed promise, 5.34 PLV. His curve has a 52.4% whiff rate, so that's, you know, also promising, and, you know, 30% K rate on the season. It's just really the command with him, and that's, you know, with anyone on this list pretty much that is not, you know, putting up great numbers or is bouncing between AAA and the majors, it's typically a command thing. It's, you know, their walk rates are above 10-12%, so I think for Nicholas, it's just, you know, work on that command. Like you said, we talked about, he had said some bad luck. So even his XFIP's pretty good. It's just, you know, just stop walking, trust your stuff. Don't, you know, walk guys as much. And I think, you know, there's an opportunity there for a setup guy in the future, if not this year. So he could be a big part of that Pirates bullpen down the road.
Yeah, that's Kyle Nicholas at 16. At 18, Aroldis Chapman somehow underneath Kyle Nicholas at 97.8 miles per hour. Been a tough year for him. In between them, though, Hunter Harvey, 97.9 miles per hour average on his fastball. One of the most underrated setup men in baseball. This seems like a clear guy that should be traded to the Cubs.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, if you're not going to get Finnegan, go get Harvey. Yeah,
you'll have him next year, too.
Right. You get 2 years. Yeah, that I could see that. He's probably, if he's available, he might be the best right-handed reliever available. I'm trying to think.
Whoa.
I mean, like, I don't consider Mason Miller available, really. And
sure.
You know, as far as guys with 1 or 2 years team control, I think Harvey's up there as at least one of the top three right-handed options. So, it'll be interesting to see what if him and Finnegan go, what the packages are for both of them. Because I wonder if Finnegan just being a closer gets a better deal, or if, you know, I'm sure teams are aware that Harvey's underlying stuff's better, and there's probably more ups or definitely more upside here with Harvey. But I mean, Finnegan's been pitching great this year as well, so who knows? But yeah, Harvey, Cubs would be a perfect fit for him. A lot of teams could use him. It's great. He was a guy who always threw hard. Just him, for him, it was health. It was, you know, trying to put together a full season. And now this is hopefully back to back years where he's been healthy and, you know, able to get through a full season.
Yep. All right. We can go to Victor Vodnik at number 19. He averages 97.7 miles per hour and he pitches for the Rockies. And we talked about how barren that Rockies bullpen is. And maybe Vodnik is one of the few guys with potential, mostly because he throws hard. It's not great IVB on the fastball. He's in the bottom third of the league, but it's got great VAA and height adjusted VAA. So he's a guy that can still live up in the zone despite the low IVB. And when you're throwing 97.7, like that's going to work pretty well. But his secondaries are pretty bad. And I think that's the main reason why he's bad. But I think you can blame that on pitching in Colorado.
Certainly it's part of the reasoning. Yeah. It's, you know, just tough luck for him being stuck there. And I do, you know, I would imagine there's better. There could be better stuff with his secondaries if he was somewhere else. But yeah, if as long as he's in Colorado, it's, I think just the fastball shapes kind of it's okay. And he throws hard, but the secondaries, he doesn't really have any secondary to rely on. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a wait and see work in progress here for me with Vodnik. But he, you know, he had in the beginning part of the season, he was looking like their best reliever. So there's, you know, as far as saves go, who knows? Like, again, who knows who's going to be closing up games for the Rockies in August? It could be him. It could be Nick Mears. It could be Tyler Kinley still. It's really up in the air. So Vodnik's a name to keep an eye on if he can, if, you know, can just get one secondary. And, you know, Hunter Harvey was kind of in a similar position last year, 2 years ago, where, you know, all right, Harvey's healthy. He's throwing hard again. This is great, but he didn't really have a secondary. And then his splitter has come a long way and it's been a great pitch for him. So I wonder if that's something, you know, Vodnik just has to add a pitch or.
And you know, splitters are really good in Coors.
Yeah, that's one of the things. And also, you know, I'm not going to say it's easy to learn, but I mean, it's been a trendy pitch where, you know, a lot of people have been able to, you know, add that to their arsenal over the off season. So I wonder if that's something he could come back with next year and really take a step forward.
Interesting. Yeah. Victor Vodnik, hopefully future splitter user. We'll wrap up the top 20 with Nate Pearson, who averages 97.6 miles per hour on his fastball. We discussed him as a possible closer of the future in Toronto and one of the biggest risers with a bunch of injuries in that Toronto bullpen. But he sports an incredibly high velocity fastball with decent IVB and most importantly, a top notch height adjusted vertical approach angle. And that makes him a clear candidate to live up in the zone with the pitch. He hasn't done that enough. 21st percentile high location, though, that is seems like a pretty clear fix that could help take him to another level. He pairs the fastball with one of the best sliders in baseball. It gets a lot more called strikes than swinging strikes, which is not usual, but it's an 87th percentile PLV, so it's clearly a good pitch.
Yeah, I mean, his diving into him this morning, his stuff is really taking a step forward. All the signs are there for him to be a breakout closer in the future. It comes down to him getting the role. So yeah, I love, you know, that we talked about Pearson a lot today. He's, you know, someone who I had wanted to believe in early in the season. Then he kind of had some struggles and I was like, you know, maybe it's time, maybe it's just never going to happen for him. But yeah, he's turned right around and he's, you know, now with Garcia and Romano out, he's, you know, forced into a high leverage role. So hopefully he can, you know, show that he belongs there and can be a part of that high leverage mix moving forward in Toronto.
All right. And now we're out of the top 20, so we'll run through these names even faster. I'll just pick out the interesting ones. Randy Rodriguez pitches for the Giants. It's his first year pitching for them, and he's struggled to a 5.04 ERA. However, he sports a 97.6 mile per hour average fastball velocity. And that's definitely interesting, though it's not the highest velocity on his team with Camilo Duvall there. I think the most interesting thing about Rodriguez is that he doesn't walk anybody, which is usually what you're expecting from a guy that throws as hard as he does, but just a 7.4% walk rate as he consistently gets his fastball in the zone. The slider is also pretty good, and he pairs it with a sinker and a changeup. I feel like he doesn't have enough secondary options to actually make him elite, but that fastball is certainly really good, despite poor IVB. That's good IVB.
No, it's
great shape. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. He's going to be really good. He's hit some road bumps recently, after kind of, you know, having a breakout. I still consider him like a breakout reliever this season, just because of, what we've seen him do. Even if it's a small sample, we just need to see him, you know, obviously be more consistent and extrapolate that to a larger sample size. But the fastball slider combo is legit. It's, you know, closer ish stuff, maybe, like, you know, not elite closer stuff, but it's, you know, on a bad team or on a, you know, mid range team, he's got closer potential for sure.
Yeah, that's it's exciting for me. Daniel Palencia pitches for the Cubs. He is interesting because he is one of the few lefties this high on the list. He throws really hard as a lefty, and that definitely makes him interesting. Few lefties are able to pump their fastball in at that velocity, and he averages 97.6 miles per hour with his fastball.
I don't think he's a lefty.
What?
Yeah, Daniel Palencia. Oh, I know who you're thinking of.
Who am I thinking of?
Luke Little, maybe? Are you thinking of? No.
This whole year, I thought they were... What is wrong with me? This whole year, I thought they were flipping them back and forth because they were two lefties. Why did I think he was a lefty? That's a lefty name if I ever read one.
It is kind of... The way you almost convinced me. I'm like, wait a minute. It just kind of... Yeah.
Well, nonetheless, that is a fast fastball, and he's got great vertical approach angle, so he can live up in the zone.
Yeah, I mean, 5.31 PLV on his fastball. Command's an issue, and the secondaries need work. The slider's okay, probably could use some tinkering to get better. But the fastball, that base on his fastball, that's, you know, not something you can teach. So hopefully he can, you know, work on either, you know, this year or next, or in the off season, figuring out some secondaries and getting his command a little bit tightened up. And I mean, the Cubs need some guys. I thought he was going to be a breakout reliever this year for the Cubs because they needed options, and it's been kind of hasn't been as great as I'd hoped. But I think Palencia still could be a factor in the second half if you know, the Cubs are going to need to start trusting some other names here.
Here, I've got a solution for him. He should try pitching left-handed.
I was going to say, is he going to be a left-handed? maybe that's the answer.
Probably not. All right. We'll continue to move down the list. Seranthony Domínguez continues to throw hard despite pitching poorly. Nick Birdie, we've mentioned multiple times throughout the year, he throws hard, though he cannot stay healthy. Orion Kerkering is here, and that's an interesting one. He's got plenty of competition ahead of him, which means he likely won't be the closer this year and probably not next year either. But Orion Kerkering is one of those guys that if you had to create a list of like 10 future like elite bullpen arms, I think Orion Kerkering is on that list.
Oh, yeah, right. I mean, and it's him and Matt Strom in that bullpen have been quietly just so, like, unbelievably good this year, I think, because it's been Hoffman and Alvarado getting all the saves. But, I mean, Kerkering has been absolutely, I mean, if he wasn't, again, it's just that bullpen's so deep because he should have more than five holds and zero saves. It's kind of a shame, but it's, you know, either way, he's still an asset and holds leagues just because of everything else he brings to the table of good ratios, high strikeouts. I mean, his stuff's just really good. We knew it last year when he got called up for the playoff run, and it's just gotten better. The sweeper is the number one pitch here, but the fastball it works at 98 miles per hour almost. And, you know, that's a good secondary. It's pretty much the secondary. So, it's more than effective.
We've compared him to Andres Munoz in the past, I think. Just a guy with an elite fastball and an elite horizontally moving pitch. I think Munoz throws a slider and Kirkring throws a sweeper. Nonetheless, it's two guys that throw their fastball really hard, but less often than their sweeper, which allows the fastball to play up even further.
Right.
I don't think Kirkring's fastball is that great. It's pretty average in terms of shape, but the velocity will definitely help that play up. But when you're only throwing it a third of the time and you pair it with one of the best sweepers in baseball, it's really going to work out. And I think that's the exact blueprint that Munoz follows.
Yeah, he's a guy who can pitch backwards almost.
Yeah. And,
you know, set people up with his sweeper. And then if you're expecting the sweeper and then he throws that fastball 98 miles per hour at the top of the zone, there's really no chance you have to do anything with it. So, yeah, he's you know, drop that sweeper usage and up the four seamer this year. And it's had great results so far.
Yep. All right. We can move over to Jorge Alcala, who throws 97.3 miles per hour on average with his four seam fastball. That pitch has really good shape, 87th percentile IVB. It doesn't have good vertical approach angle, though. He should still be able to live up in the zone. And he's also a guy that throws his slider more often than he does his fastball. It's not the greatest pitch, but when you pair it with a 97 mile per hour fastball, Alcala is pretty interesting. And I don't see how he could ever take over the closer role in Minnesota with Yoan Duran there.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. And he's already 4 years service time, which is always surprises me when I see that, because feels like he's been, you know, up and down for a long while here. But yeah, he's going to be a free agent in 2026.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what interests me here. He'll be, you know, only 30 years old. As a free agent. So there could be closer options for him down the road, but not yet. And even, yeah, with that fastball velo is even taking a step forward this season. It's really been a big game changer for him. I was high on him a few years back, and it's been a while since I've been this excited for him. So, yeah, I mean, obviously helps the Twins bullpen in the short term, but, yeah, looking towards 2026, it's going to be interesting to see if he can keep this up, if he can land a closer job somewhere.
Yeah, he could be like the next Ryan Pressly, who was traded out of the Twins organization and was a pretty unheralded pitcher until he landed a closer gig with the Astros. So maybe Alcala can follow that same path as he's headed towards free agency in due time. Our next pitcher, Will Klein. We've talked about him a lot this year. I think we'll skip over him, but he definitely feels like a closer of the future because of his big velocity and with a few options ahead of him in Kansas City. That's Will Klein. Edwin Diaz throws really hard, of course. Jeremiah Estrada has had a big breakout this year at 97 miles per hour on his heater. Kyle Finnegan somehow throws 97. He doesn't strike me as a guy that throws hard, but I don't watch him. but I would like to talk about Adrian Morahone. I try to bring him up as often as we can because I feel like he's not being talked about enough. Mostly because in our fantasy league, you can always look at which relievers are being streamed, and I'm the only guy streaming Morahone, and I feel like he needs to be streamed more because he's been so good this year.
Yeah, I would love to see him start getting more holds, and it's just for overall value. But he's turned a corner here. Everything, I mean, PLV is a huge fan of him, and it starts. You know, the slider is obviously a great pitch for him, but the fastball has taken a step forward, and not just in velo, but I believe, yeah, I mean, almost 16 inch IVB. It's been, you know, solid, above average, and it's just paired well with his slider and, you know, his sweeper that he throws occasionally, but it's really just a slower slider. He's been one of the more underrated guys as well, and it's just because I think he's not getting saves and holds, but it's like I'll say it again that I think he's the best lefty in that bullpen. So love to see him get more chances to get holds than, you know, Matsui or Peralta.
Yeah. And I think he can go underrated because he's like a post type prospect where he was once a top starting pitching prospect
like Estrada,
and injured for a long time. And now he's figuring stuff out as a reliever, and he's still just 25. So there's a lot of time for him to be good. When is he going to be a free agent? That's got to be soon. Let's see. He's going to be a free agent in 2027. So that's after 2026. Oh, all right. Yeah. So we're coming up on Adrian Morihone free agency season.
He'll be relatively young going into that too. Yeah. So yeah, it could be an interesting
27.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. David Bednar and Pete Fairbanks both throw 97.1 on their fastballs. They're both trustworthy. Tiago Vieira, who I mention sometimes whenever he comes up.
He's been on like five different teams. That's why. Because we talk about him as signing somewhere. Yeah, exactly.
I don't think you can trust Vieira. He just does not have command.
He's like the one guy on this list where I'm trying to find an argument to make, and it's hard because he's 30 years old and he just bounced around teams. But the sinker slider potential, I see it. I see why teams keep picking him up. I mean, he gets DFA'd and he keeps getting chances, and I see why, because that, you know, the base with his sinker and the slider could be solid as well. So maybe he lands somewhere that's and it clicks for him finally. I mean, he's been okay with Arizona so far. And that's a team where they could use some depth in the bullpen. So maybe he sticks in Arizona and makes things work. But yeah, he's probably of the 46 people that are in this top 46 list. He's probably the least likely to make it as any fantasy relevant.
Totally. All right. And Griffin Jacks is next. This one's interesting to me because his velocity continues to climb, which is not something you expect, but if you think about it more, it's like, oh, wait, yeah, Griffin Jacks is a failed starter. So as he figures things out in the bullpen, his velocity continues to rise. And you can look, 2021, he was a starter, 92.6 miles per hour on the fastball. 2022, when he transitioned to the bullpen, up to 95. Then last year, up to 96.4. And now he's up to 97 on the fastball. That's pretty dope with Griffin Jacks, who is a guy that gets by more so with his incredible sweeper, 92nd percentile PLV. And then he pairs it with a changeup as well, but the fastball up at 97 with like solid IVB and great VAA make that pitch one of the best in baseball, 89th percentile PLV. And I mean, that's why Griffin Jacks is taking his game to another level, and we've seen the strikeouts increase by almost 10%.
Yeah, it's similar in a way to, I guess, Kirkering. Like the sweeper is the pitch that you got to be scared about, but it's the four seamer that's gonna get you in the box. And look at, I mean, I just looking at it now, you look at his put away rate, it's 30.8% put away on his four seamer and only 24 in his sweeper. So it's, yeah, it's he's you know, getting the strikeouts with the four seamer, and the sweeper's kind of put away rate. I have to double check, but it's basically like, I'll find the exact definition.
I was saying, where is it on the pitcher list player page?
I'm looking at Savant. I don't think we have it on our page yet, but it's,
we might have it.
Rate of two strike pitches that result in a strikeout. So yeah, when you're up 0-2, when you're up with two strikes, what pitch are you getting the strikeout on? So,
yeah. Oh no, I know what it is. I'm trying to find out where it is. Go ahead.
So that's, I don't think we have it on our page yet.
We do. It's under when you go to the repertoire and you choose the pitch, you go to counts.
That's under repertoire. Gotcha.
You go to counts, and then there's PAR percentage, which is put away rate, 90th percentile on the fastball, 65th on the sweeper.
Yeah. So, I mean, that fastball is doing a lot of damage up in the count. And yeah, he's setting things up with the sweeper. And then that fastball is such a good secondary. It's weird to say call it a secondary, but yeah, it's fooling hitter. So yeah, he's really taken his game to a different level. It used to just be a sweeper that we were excited about, and now it's, you know, the four seamer or the sinker as well. They've really taken a step forward.
Yeah, that's Griffin Jacks, looking like one of the best closers in baseball. And we'll wrap this up. I'm going to read off the last, that's 10 names. Jason Foley, Jonathan Hernandez, Elvis Peguero, Nick Mears, Eric Miller, Brock Stewart, Jeff Hoffman, Brian Abreu, Tanner Scott, and Yimi Garcia. They all throw hard. Rick, is there one guy on here that you would like to talk about more than the others?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about a lot of guys. Jonathan Hernandez, we haven't talked about, but he's still figuring things. He used to be really good. He's figuring things out still. And, you know, we talked about Coors being unfair to pitchers, and I didn't mention it earlier, but the fact that Tyler Kinley's got a 9.0 ERA in 30 games and he's like their closer, it's just wild to me. But Nick Mears is probably, I think Nick Mears might be their at least most exciting option in the bullpen. He's got the best strikeout rate. He has, his fastball has pretty good IVB, 16.7 inches. Slider is a solid secondary, 5.24 PLV, 48% whiff rate. He throws a curveball a little bit more than a slider. I think he should just ditch the curve and go fastball slider and just see how that works. But it's just, Coors is always going to be hard. But I think he has the ability to get swings and misses there, and can't say that about a lot of the relievers. So
yeah,
he's kind of intriguing. But again, it's Coors, so don't like go adding him anywhere. But just, if you're looking for a long-term Rockies reliever potential option, Nick Mears is probably the guy I would recommend. But that's only for really deep leagues for now and just monitoring it.
Yeah. All right. And then I will discuss Eric Miller very briefly. Big lefty for the Giants. He throws really hard. It's his first year in the major, so he's a breakout as well alongside Randy Rodriguez. That's his name, right?
Yep. Randy Rodriguez.
Okay. Eric Miller, though, throws really hard from the left side. There we go. Finally got it right. Not great VAA and pretty average IVB, which means he probably needs to live down in the zone with the pitch. And he's not been doing that. He's been living up in the zone like better than anyone, 91st percentile. And he pairs it with a changeup, which I think that leads to me even more suggesting that he throw both of those low in the zone. Nonetheless, Eric Miller has found pretty decent amount of success this year. I don't think he's like a closer of the future, but with the Giants at the stage where they currently are, I mean, he could be a lefty that they trust for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, this... The Giants bullpen could be really fun moving like for the next few years with Miller, Rodriguez, Duvall. I'm missing
Walker.
And then you talk about another, you want to add another lefty to the mix, Reggie Crawford coming up through the system.
Yeah.
I mean, another guy who throws 98 plus from the left side. So having him and Miller is like unfair, but I mean, they could have a really dominant bull that, and that's probably going to be a thing that's, you know, we talked about how that's won them, you know, World Series in the past, and that's probably what they can, you know, build around as their, you know, their bread and butter, just having a dominant bullpen. As long as you get to the fifth, sixth inning, like the game's over if the Giants have a lead. So yeah, the Miller's part of that. I mean, I can't believe how good he struggled a little bit the past week, but other than that, I mean, he's been absolutely nails for them. Yeah, just a super fun bullpen moving forward. It was Duvall, Miller, Walker, Rodriguez, Crawford. It's kind of unfair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned Crawford. He's yet to make his debut. Are there any other players that are in the minor leagues that catch your eye in terms of fastball velocity?
Yeah, I mean, I did a savant search for, minor leaguers who have been through, how many guys have hit 96 plus or 97 plus this season. Some names that stick out. The Reds are well represented here. They have Zach Maxwell, who was kind of a hyped up sleeper candidate for deeper holds leagues this season. He's been pitching pretty well at Triple A. But again, we talk about the Reds and Alexis Diaz, and they have Maxwell, they have Yosfarsoleta, Anier Laureano, who's down at the lower levels, but between Maxwell and Zuleta, I mean, those two guys are very interesting relief prospects who should get a chance at some point this year. I don't see why they wouldn't. Miami, Elvis Alvarado, Josh Eknis, both lower level guys, but they throw hard, could be potential. I mean, they need right-handed relievers for the future. Those two guys make sense. And the Cubs, obviously, the Cubs need anything they can find. Michael Arias is a kind of a big prospect for them as far as relievers go. I could see him making his debut sooner rather than later. And a little bit further down, they have Eduardo Nunez, who's also a big, big velo guy for them. So those are kind of the more interesting names, especially for teams that need bullpen help for now and for next year and beyond. So those are the guys I found that kind of made me were the most interested for me.
All right. And Ohtani is actually the only guy on this list. Michael Ohtani of the A's is the only guy on this list to debut. He made his debut like 2 weeks ago or something, and he tossed just two outs before being optioned back to the minors. But he did average 98.6 miles per hour on his fastball when he was there. So definitely a guy that's closer to the majors than maybe some of the other names on this list, though. As you mentioned, plenty of them are at AAA, and we could see them at some point this year. And so those will be some names to keep an eye on. I'll run through them real quick just because these are not names that people are familiar with. So maybe hearing them one more time will help them remember when they're called up. It was Michael Ohtani on the A's, Zach Maxwell on the Reds, Yosfer Zulueta on the Reds, Elvis Alvarado on the Marlins, Michael Arias on the Cubs, Reggie Crawford on the Giants, Edwaniel Nunez on the Cubs, Josh Eknis on the Marlins, Anier Laureano on the Reds, Yosper Sanchez on the Tigers, Chen-Wei Lin on the Cardinals, and George Klassen on the Phillies. Definitely keep an eye out for those names when they do eventually get called up, because they throw fast. And that's a fast podcast. Just kidding. It was a pretty,
that's
pretty
one of our longer ones. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, just playing some tricks. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug anything you're working on as well as your Twitter?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. Yeah, just working on reliever, list every week, closing time, hold up, saves plus holds. Probably going to do something about the trade deadline, and we'll have our trade deadline podcast probably in the next 2 weeks or so. But yeah, probably either I or someone will put together some sort of trade deadline primer for relievers, because this year feels like it's going to be a big one as far as relievers moving. There's a lot of teams that need them, a lot of teams that have them, so should be a fun deadline as far as relievers go.
Yep. And you can follow Rick on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. It hasn't been updated like all year. So if you want to find my newest work, go to pitcherlist.com. Check out the First Pitch Podcast, Pitcher List's daily podcast. I do the weekend editions, so tune in Saturday and Sunday mornings. I also write the Monday editions of the daily reliever ranks articles over at Pitcher List. So go check those out. And you can find more of my work at Baseball HQ, as I do playing time analysis for the A's, Giants, and Diamondbacks. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. We'll talk to you all next week.